You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 31st of January. We're 7 days to the trade deadline, and we're taking your questions on a Facebook Live edition. Plus, what happened last night? An interesting theory given to me from someone way smarter than I am. And we'll talk about all the rest of the NBA coming up on a live edition of Locked On Jazz. How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, a lot of geeky numbers, and give you an update what's going on. You can get this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, any of your podcatchers, or tell the smart speaker to play podcast Locked On Jazz. Thanks so much for jumping aboard, whether you're watching us live, tuning in later. We super appreciate it. The Locked On Podcast Network on this 31st of January is hovering at 4.77 million downloads this month. I don't think we're going to get to 5 million. We've never crossed 4 million before, however. And as I have before, I mean it sincerely. I want to thank all of you. If you had not had faith in Locked On Jazz, the entire Locked On Podcast Network would not have been created. I think I thank you. I don't know. My wife might tell me it's become, you know, bigger and bolder and wider ranging than we ever thought, and I shouldn't thank you. Locked On NBA with Kevin Pelton today. Great, great episode. We did a trade deadline, and I like the way we did it better than I've heard other shows. Obviously, I did that. That's an arrogant comment, but I wouldn't do it otherwise. We talked about like the moves that would actually move the meter and change things would be more than anything else. So you'll probably want to listen to that. I thought it was really good. I thought Kevin and I get along so well, spend so much time together, such good friends, that sometimes I actually don't think we always do the best shows. This one I thought was really, really good. We hadn't talked about the items we talked about. Last time we went to dinner, came back, came back having had this whole dinner, had a bunch of conversations, frankly, that we probably couldn't share, and it was really, it was kind of a restricted show. So, all right, let's get to it. Last night was the worst defensive performance of the year by the Utah Jazz. It was a 126, ranked 52nd of the season in defensive performance. It usurped the performance against the Toronto Raptors on November 5th, which was the previous worst defensive performance of the year, and the one by the Indiana Pacers at Indiana on the fifth game of that road trip. They just got waxed last night. Someone pointed out to me a really interesting point of view. I had not thought of it. This person's way smarter about basketball than I am. So Kevin Pelton pointed out to me yesterday when we were together in Portland that the last time that Myers Leonard started Jusuf Nurkić was the night in which Dame Lillard went off for the franchise record. The person that's brighter than I am pointed out the following to me. When Nurkić is playing and CJ McCollum and Dame Lillard have created this relationship amongst each other where they're not worrying about each other. They both have kind of learned, all right, you can get 26, I can get 22. We don't have to worry about getting each other off. We can keep going. We just play our games. It works out. We score 50% of our team's points. No one. But when Nurkić is out there and they're running a pick and roll between Dame and Nurkić, Dame's got to think about, ooh, he's open in the pocket. If I hit him in the pocket, how many shots? Like, he's got to be engaged as a point guard to think about. This is a little bit what Donovan's going through, too. He's got to be engaged a little bit to think about, all right, do I need to get Nurk the ball? Has Nurk had enough touches? What can Nurk create? Same thing with CJ. They have to be cognizant of that third piece of their puzzle. When he was not there last night, while there's no question that I think Nurkić beat us in game three, the impact it had last night is that Dame and CJ were just free. They don't worry about Myers Leonard. Myers Leonard's just a spacer who's going to take a shot. And so Dame and CJ just came out of that game last night and just played it crazy free. And if you go back and look at that first quarter where they score the most points that anyone has scored against the Jazz in a first quarter, they're not running like a ton of pick and roll. They're just playing. They're just playing with this incredible freedom that they probably don't have. Nurk, and this isn't to say that they're, don't misunderstand this, this is not to say that they're better without Yusuf Nurkic. It just means on this one given game, the impact was how free those guys were and why it happened. Lillard had 21 pick and rolls last. They only ran 47 pick and rolls all night last night. Like, that's not a lot for them. Contrast to the Jazz ran 90. On a regular night, the Blazers are running probably, you know, 85 per 100 possessions or something of that nature, maybe 80. You know, Nurkic and Dame are the second most. So they just played last night. They just got space. They went 1-on-1. Dame pulled up for a three on like one play in the fourth quarter. And they were brilliant. I mean, on their 21 picks last night, Dame averaged 1.7 points per. So they killed us on them. But they didn't. That wasn't their game last night. Their game was just those guys free and not worrying about having another piece of the puzzle that they had to put together. So I think that was just an interesting perspective. It doesn't excuse. I mean, the Jazz just got crushed last night. The weirdest thing that I simply cannot explain in any way, shape, or form is that in 16 games now, over the last 4 years between these two teams, two of them have been close. Two. Why that is, I don't know. Maybe it's as simple as if Dame and CJ get going, we can't stop it. Maybe it's as simple as if we get our offense rolling, they can't stop it. I really don't know. The defense has not been as sharp recently. Played some incredible offensive teams. Let's make sure we're clear on that. If you go look at the last 20 games in the NBA, or even last 10, but let's go last 20 because I think it makes for a better... Let's go last 15 because, frankly, that's the easier one for me to get to quickly. The number one offenses in the NBA are Golden State at an insane 122 points per 100 possession, then Denver, then Portland, then Houston, Milwaukee, San Antonio, New Orleans, and Minnesota was in here until just recently. They're 16th. Our defense has not been as good recently. We played, if you kind of run through it, the Clippers we held to a 103.7, which is okay. We smacked them offensively. The Clippers' offense is usually about a 107, so it's better than... Portland put a 108 on us, which actually was pretty good performance by us in that one because Portland's offense is averaging around higher than that. Denver was a 107, which was pretty good, but it wasn't dominating on our part. We dominated Minnesota the first time we played them. The second time, Minnesota got us pretty good. And then Portland last night crushed the Jazz defense. In fact, the Jazz have now, over the last 15 games, slipped to third in the NBA defensively just because of last night's game. And fifth, back to fifth, overall on the season by NBA stats. I don't know about cleaning the glass, but they got crushed on that. So that's, last night they just got beat, and for whatever reason that matchup, I do think this, 2-9 in the Western Conference, is the difference is minuscule. It's why the trade deadline questions we're about to start on are probably super important. The second part about, and Kevin and I addressed that, he has a move that Oklahoma City can make, he has a move the Jazz can make, that he thinks pushes them into Western Conference Finals caliber teams. That's on Locked On NBA if you want to go grab it, either now, immediately, or after the show. But I do think that so much of his matchups, like so much of the storyline coming into the season was dictated about Portland struggling. They got swept by New Orleans. And I think they get swept again by New Orleans. That's just a terrible matchup for him. If we play New Orleans, I think we beat New Orleans. If we play Portland, I'm not sure we got out of the first round last year if we played Portland. We got Oklahoma City. That was a good matchup for us. Quinn was able to exploit their weaknesses, and we played them in a manner. As much as we want to be the second or third best team in the Western Conference, it was never that we were going to, with our roster, be dominantly better than those teams. Our defense is elite the same way their offense is elite. And then Denver's offense is elite and their defense is kind of average. And our offense is average. And the Rockets' offense was elite. And last year its defense was elite. So it was way better than us, but now it's average. And that's just kind of, we're all very, very similar. There's not a huge discrepancy here in who these teams are. Denver's point differential is is considerably better this year and deserves credit for that. And Oklahoma City's has been. We'll see if it lasts. But these are matchups, and Portland is just not one of our better matchups on some nights. And it would be, the indicators all have us playing a 4 or 5 playoff series with Portland. I don't know how I feel about that. That'd be an awfully hard matchup. Dame's seen 21,000 pick and rolls in his lifetime and understands exactly what we're coming at and how we approach him, and would probably know, what the next thing to do is at all times. And it would be, and their bench is getting better and better. So that's interesting. If we get Oklahoma City again, are they so much better defensively and don't have the weakness that they had last time that we would struggle with them? Or does that continue to be a good matchup? I kind of like it. It keeps, Rudy causes Paul George and Russell problems. There's other matchups that probably don't. Today's show is brought to you by Intercap Lending. What amazing growth. Tip of the hat to the people, Josh Romney and Brock and the crew over at Intercap Lending. They've gone from 2 branches to 11. They now have one in Tooele, 2 in Utah County, Ogden. They got the Palace in Cottonwood. Why? Because of relationships. That's what I asked. Why have you been able to grow so much? Relationships, and we get deals done. Real estate agents want lending companies that get deals done. That's what they do. I wanted a refinance. I wanted the deal done. That's what Steve Carter did. And what's so great is the other Locked On listeners who've had the same experience. Tanner Lacey, I worked with Steve Carter. It was by far my best experience with a lender. Steve was always on top of everything, was in constant contact with me, my builder, to make sure everything was moving along great, and we were always super helpful. There was one point in the process where we hit a little bit of a speed bump, and not only did Steve help us get over it, he stayed with us till 8 p.m. on a Friday, making sure that the paperwork and information was ready for a third party we were working with. Definitely recommend Intercap, and especially Steve. Same experience I had. Call Steve Carter. His direct line is 385-885-28. That's 385-885-28. Intercap Lending, NMLS number 190465. For more information, visit intercaplending.com. And congratulations to Intercap Lending and their great, amazing growth. All right, let's get to the questions today. There should be a lot of good ones. Trade deadline is 7 days away. Bryant says, hi. Matt Moon wants to know if he can meet Joe Ingles. Zach says, I'm glad you're doing these again. I do them, honestly, I try to do them every Thursday, but there's some Thursdays where if I'm getting up, getting the kids to school or something, I'm doing my show at 5:45, 6 o'clock in the morning. There's really no reason for me to go live. What was the mood on the plane last night after a hard loss? The way the plane works, two things. One is we have two different buses. We have a player and coach's bus, and then we have a staff bus. And so that's the strength and conditioning staff, the PR media staff, the front office, the broadcast staff. So they get on the plane first. We get on the plane second. It's very regimented. I walk through the section, Ricky Rubio, Joe Ingles, Jay Crowder. Talking to someone on FaceTime. Joe was probably talking to Renee on FaceTime. Tyler Cavanaugh was to the left. There are two other people here. Then the front section where we enter, then the front section's all the other players, Rudy and a bunch of the guys, Donovan are up there. And then the next section's the coaches, and then the next section is the staff. And then you get off the plane in the same fashion. So, like, when you ask me what the mood on the plane was, there wasn't music blaring in some raucous party, but there actually isn't that after a win either. I mean, the only time I ever remember the plane being really kind of out there was when we beat the Clippers and we're flying to Oakland. And that definitely had a party feel to it, to play the Warriors. Not like people were drinking or there's no booze on the plane, but I'm saying just like there was a vibe, and I remember kind of hearing some music, and it was definitely a group that had accomplished something. But most nights are all the same. Also, my interaction on the plane to get that answer to that question is like 30 seconds of me walking through their section when they first sat down or getting some food and are probably talking to their loved ones. So I don't have a lot of answer. Kristen Kenny goes into the locker room. I don't do locker room anymore, which is probably disconnects me a little bit. So I don't really have an answer to that. I would tell you, though, these guys are pros, and that's just one of 82 where they got waxed. I mean, they just got beat. Like, those are easier last night to deal with. Portland was great. They beat you. They're better than you. And you move on. And, these guys also understand a lot better than fans do, Like, you're playing 82 games. If you're freaking great, you win 50 of them. Winning 50 games is really, really hard. And, you know, so that means you're losing 3 out of every 8 to pretty much to win 50 games. So I think they get that really well. Tough loss last night. Can we take anything from the loss and what it would mean for the trade deadline? Again, I think the front office is really, you know, Laurie, good. I mean, I think the front office, let's say the front office is on the verge of a deal right now. Maybe they see something last night and they think to themselves, you know what, you're right, we need to get it done. But these guys are pretty darn good of not being impacted by recency bias. You know, if you were about to trade a guy because of his work that he's had with you for the last 50 games and then he goes 8 of 8 from 3 or gets a or grabs a steal in a key moment, do you suddenly change your opinion of where you think his progression is and what you thought? Like, I mean, I'd use Dante as an example. We clearly as an organization still believe that Dante has steps to make, is going to be a better player. He had a 5-game run before the ankle injury in which he showed that. So that makes it easier to believe that. But had he not had that 5-game run and he just hadn't been as good as you might have liked in the first 30, does that really change your entire opinion of what your base of work, which says he's going to progress? It's nice to have this 5-game sample. To the same point of that is, if you were in the camp that you didn't think Dante was ever going to develop and he has 5 good games, I would hope that doesn't change your opinion. Like, you need a lot more than 5 games. So I think that these guys last night might have had a, you know, maybe it's a reconfirmation of something you already believed. But I think that there's an element where, again, same concept, that these guys are vet. They know what they're doing. They do this really well and have looked through it. Love Favors, but I do not see a way for the third star without us costing Favors. Could you break down what the Jazz need to do to clear space this summer? Can we do it and keep Rubio and Korver? I don't think, if you're talking for a third star, I would have to be, I don't have the, and I don't know if S, what Dan Clayton did, like an unbelievable, awesome thing last year where, like, he was, you were able to put in the salaries and how it played at SLC Dunk. I think it was Dan Clayton did that. I hope I just gave credit to the right person. I don't know if they have that up this year. But so the Favors is $16.9 million non-guaranteed next year. Ricky Rubio is a free agent. Kyle Korver is $7 million next year. As of right now, the Jazz have about $73 million of on their books. And I can't entirely look at that and tell whether it includes, I think that does not include Faves. If I'm correct on that. I just pulled up my calculator to check it. And for whatever weird reason, my calculator on my computer has become this mammothly large, huge entire screen. Like, calculators should be small. All right, I've got it back to a normal size. Let me quickly just do. So Rudy's at 24. Ingles is at 11. Dante's at 11. Call Korver 8. Call Crowder 8. Donovan is at 3, which is a gem. Howell's on the books next year for 2. Grayson's on the next year for about 2.5. Tony Bradley for 2. And Royce O'Neal has is a guarantee. So that's 73 without Favors. Depends how salary cap next year, I think, will be right around 100 if I understand it, the projections correctly. So if you try, the minute you re-sign Rubio, you end up with you're going to start cutting into any space you might have. Korver, you can clear. It's set at 109 for next year. So 72, 28, $38 million without adding a player. So we have enough space to go offer a max contract for that third player. The problem that we talked about yesterday is, are you really going to get him? And I would tell you the consensus around the league is that the Jazz are a much more desirable franchise than they've ever been before, but that they are not likely to be able to sign a marquee free agent over other organizations that will be bidding on that free agent as well. That's the general consensus talking to people in the league. You can decide you think that's unfair and that's wrong and we're so much better and we have Donovan, we have Rudy. Just telling you, just being frank. And I think that's the number one evaluation piece that our organization has to make in the next 7 days. Is while maybe it would be ideal if Tobias Harris or Nikola Mirotic or someone of that sort is willing to sign with us in the offseason, do we really believe when we do not have any control over it, we just need them to say yes, that they actually will? And I don't know that answers. Tobias Harris gets an offer in the offseason from Brooklyn, Utah, New Orleans. He went to Tennessee as they rebuild. Atlanta, as they decide he's going to be the piece that goes with them for the future. I don't think Indiana can get all the way under. Actually, Indiana's got a ton of money. Indiana, I don't know why. Maybe he'd like Utah over Indiana. Does he choose Utah? You can make your argument. I got it. You're a fan. You like it here. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with here. And as I said, as the people in the front office of league teams have said to me, Utah's a much more desirable place. It's the most desirable it's ever been at any stage of its franchise. Is it still desirable enough to go get someone instead of another place? And they think the answer to that is no. Or unlikely. So that, I think, puts an urgency that you're trading to acquire your players. Now, I don't know what third star would be available, but you might try to make a move in which you now function over the cap. And if you're functioning over the cap next year, you are making a whichever players are left on your roster, you can maintain them by going over the cap and trying to stay under the luxury tax, though the Millers are perfectly willing to go into the luxury tax if it's the right move. What do the Jazz need to do to make the Western Conference Finals? Can they do it with this group? They can do it with this group. I would think they probably need to get matchup lucky, as we were talking about earlier. I think they need to be healthy. I think we saw Royce O'Neal, because of Dante's injury, has had to try to guard Dame Lillard in space in two games recently. That's not his strength. Like, Royce O'Neal is a really good NBA player who has certain things that he's very, very good at, and then he has weaknesses. That's why he went undrafted. If he had no weaknesses, he'd been a first-round draft pick. Those weaknesses, I thought, he's not a defender in space. He's a defender with strength and grit and hold, maybe, and grab, bumping around a little bit and getting in on you, and physically wants to put your body in you, and you can't move him. He's so strong. Well, at 35 feet, you try that on Dame, and he's gone. And then you give Dame space, and now it's lateral quickness, and he's gone. So, you know, having Dante last night on Dame would have been a huge thing. So we need to be at full bore. And there's probably some shooting upgrades, and some little areas of upgrades, and maybe there's some big upgrades that you could make to try to do that. You mentioned recently about whether the three-star model is correct for the Jazz or not. Could you expound on that? I could. So the three-star model is that we sign Tobias Harris in the offseason and deem him a star, or we trade for someone and deem them a star. And then your model is that you're spending, of your $107 million, you're spending 75 of it on 3 players, and then you're piecing the rest of your roster together with smaller numbers until you get to the luxury tax threshold, with whatever, you know, of the 1920 threshold, which I think is about 132 if the salary cap's 109. And so, you know, maybe you're even 3 guys. Now, Donovan's cheap for us, so it's nice right now, right? We can go 30-30 and Donovan and be at 63 and then be able to. But eventually you're going to be 30-30-30 as 3 stars. You're at 90, and then you're piecing together the final 12 roster spots out of $40 million. The other angle would be that you go to a 2-star model, which would be Rudy Donovan, both at 60, and then you have another $80 million by which to, or $70 million to build the rest of your roster, and you can do what Indiana's done, 11 for Darren Collison, 11 for Tyreek Irving, 11 Evans, 11 for Doug McDermott, 11 for Thaddeus Young, 11 for Bogdan Bogdanovic, and then you have this star, and you're in Miles Turner and Sabonis or Young, and you piece it together that way. And so I think that's, those are the two different models. There's some argument that since we might have a hard time getting a third star, that we might then instead be better off playing that model. The other one is, can you trade for someone that would be close to a third star that has only 1 or 2 years left on their deal? Because Donovan isn't going to be a big salary piece until the 2021-22 season, I believe. So you have 2 more years. So is there a player out there that you can sign that has 2 years left on his deal at 30 or something, or sign someone to a 2-year $30 million deal, or trade for someone 2-year $30 million, 28-25, deal? And then he and Rudy are your two big numbers. They're at 50 of your deal. Then you have Donovan, and then you can piece, Joe and 12, and maybe you can keep Faves at 16. You keep your pieces together. And whatever, depending on Ricky and what he's going to cost, and Dante's at 11, now you've kind of done that, right? That's the other model that you're building. And so with Donovan not hitting the financial threshold until the 2021-22 season, a Tobias Harris 4-year deal in the offseason is not the easiest thing, because it puts you into the three-star model at some point. Also, by the way, Rudy comes up in 21-22, so he's going to be a supermax player in 21-22. So you signed Tobias to a 4-year max. You've got Rudy as a supermax, Donovan on his new deal at the max, whoever you sign this year for a 4-year max. That gets really tough on your salary structure. You might be better off making a deal in trading for someone if they don't have the full amount of years. Does that make sense? That was kind of a different segment of that. Today's show is brought to you in part by our good friends, as the live shows often are, by Shamrock Auto. Rob Taylor, such a good dude. He's not Rob Thomas, Rob Taylor. Rob Thomas might be a good dude too. Rob Taylor did such great things during the holidays. Just want to tip my hat to them. This is another place where listener reviews and reader reviews is probably the first thing I would go check out. Let me give you a little background, though, about how Rob built this. Rob didn't like his car buying experiences, so he actually went and opened up his own car dealership. And the first thing he did was he got a guy who was a technician for 25 years to become his buyer. It's like, that way I now know that every single one of the cars that comes into our building is done and taken care of correctly. And that was the first key. Then the second thing was, I'm going to make sure that there's no gimmicks and that we're lean, and we have, so that we take less time in the sales process, our margins can be tighter, we can get people better deals, and we can roll. They've now built a place at Shamrock Auto where people come from across the state or out of state to come and get cars from Rob, or who literally call up Rob and say, I want this specific car, preferably 12 months old, 5 to 20,000 miles, and Rob goes and finds it for him. Kellen's their sales guy, does a great job. So go check it out. It's Shamrock Auto Group. It's in Pleasant Grove. Utah County assault vehicles would be kind of the style often, but they can go get you whatever you need. Just past the point of the mountain, out in Pleasant Grove, independent car dealership, and do great, great things for you. Rob is always so generous with his time and is willing to give you his number. Tell him you're with Locked On Jazz. He'll give you a discount, and plus they have a really cool cooler deal going on for you right now. The Lifetime, which is a Utah company, gives you a free Lifetime 7-day cooler. It's like getting a free Yeti, and those are amazing. Give Rob a call, 801-319-2250, 801-319-2250. Go to shamrockautogroup.com. Let's go to your questions. Whoa, I flipped the camera. There we go. Actually, that's a better view. You know what I should do? I should really do the show with this view the whole time. Isn't that incredible? What a place do we live. What an unbelievable place we live. Let's just do that. We'll do this for a little while. That'll be much more pleasant zen for you. No, actually, I'm too old. It's too close to me. I can't read it. It's kind of funny. All right. What happened last night? It looked like Donovan was pressing way too much. We didn't have anyone trying to rebound. You know, I mean, they got beat, and then Quinn really wanted the tempo picked up, and Ricky wasn't doing it. Pulled Ricky because of it at one point because he was not pushing the tempo at all. And then so when Donovan came in to play point, like the instructions were to push the tempo and get going. And so that I think is what you saw out of Donovan. Zach, I just finished Locked on NBA. It was great. Yeah, I thought Kevin was really terrific in the episode. I'd strongly, strongly suggest Locked on NBA today with Kevin Pelton. Maybe you can push us over 5 million all by yourself. Also, you discussed Harrison Barnes and mentioned how he is misused, I think is what you meant. Could you explain? Feels like he should be better, more valuable. Harrison Barnes is an interesting player. He's never been used correctly, right? So he was a fifth option, stand in the corner, shoot threes in Golden State. And then he became the primary option in Dallas, and that doesn't really work for him either. I don't know. I'd have to really dig into what his skill set is. Can, and I don't know these answers. I mean, you just can't watch a guy enough. It's not my job. If I was in the front office, I'd watch everything. But so he's a good spot-up shooter, right? He's in the 72nd percentile of spot-up shooting. His pick-and-roll handler game is not good. Is that because they don't use him? Is it because he actually can't dribble? Is it because he's not a good passer? Like, I don't know that. His isolation game has been better in the past years. This year, it's middle of the pack. He's not a great transition player, which usually leads me to believe that that's a sign of athleticism, but isolation is also. He can play the three and the four, so to me he seems kind of interesting in that regard. His unguarded shooting, catch and shoot, is in the 72nd percentile, 65% effective field goal percentage. He's only okay off the bounce. I don't know. I think he's very good isolation if he goes right. He's not very good if he goes left. Is that something like you put him with a coach like Quinn who uses him well? I don't really know what the answer on that is. But I think that I would just say that, like, he's just a player I think is intriguing. Now he's, you know, his salary is real. And I would like to lessen the burden on Joe Ingles. I think Joe Ingles has been great, but he's 31 years old, and I think that there's a lot on him. Harrison Barnes has a player option for $25 million next year. I would assume he'll pick it up. But if he doesn't, and he's a free agent, and we have space, that's a player I would dig into. But I would also have just watched a ton of him. Zach Campbell, I love Ricky and have always wanted him on our team. That being said, is making a push for Drew possibly one of the best moves we could make? Well, Drew Holiday's good. He's not been playing a lot of point guard. New Orleans at this point does not seem like they're on the verge of wanting to move people unless Drew tells them he wants out, and that would be interesting. He's paid $26 million next year, 26 the year after, player option for 27. I have not done the research on him this year. I did a ton of research on him the year he was a free agent. My only concern on Drew Holiday is he had an unnatural mid-range shooting year a year ago that made him an efficient player, and up to that point had not been a particularly efficient player. And so it makes me a little nervous of whether or not he's the answer. Looking him up quickly on Cleaning the Glass, his points per shot attempt is a little down from last year, but it's up from where he was in most of his career. Excuse me. His usage is high. Nothing bad there. His shot attempts, he's only taking 27% of his shots as threes, which is in the 18th percentile of all combo guards. That's low. He's going to the rim still at a high rate at 28 years old, which says that he's still got all the athleticism, and he's finishing at a high rate, at a really high rate. His mid-range shooting, which last year he shot 47% from all mid-range shots, which was the 96th percentile. So that's like what jumped him up last year, is this year is at 42 and has been in the 40s now for five straight years. He's really good. He'd be a really, really great compliment at 6'4", 29 years old, with experience next to Donovan Mitchell. He'd be great. And that contract works. 26-26, and then if you have to bite the bullet for the 1 year, you do it, or maybe you can negotiate with him. You know, he's probably not at 28 going to want to go to 31 as a free agent. So if it's working, you sign him. You tell him you can talk to about opting out and signing a deal that works for us. Drew Holiday would be great. Now, do we have a package we can put together for Drew Holiday? I mean, I'm going to guess it's a one or two first-round draft picks and Dante Exum. It's a lot. And Rubio. You know, that would be, you know, is there a way you do rebuild the entire team and you include Favors and go get Mirotić in the same deal and you just become New Orleans South? I'm playing with the trade machine right now. I mean, I was actually talking to someone the other day about, was kind of what a joke this is. Like, we can all put together these deals now. So if, you know, if you're going to get Drew Holiday, you are probably having to put together some deal that is Dante Exum and Ricky Rubio plus one or two first-round picks for Drew Holiday. If you're going to make them make that move right now. Maybe you can do it with Ricky and Tabo and some other piece that's $2 million just to get the numbers down and two first-round picks. Just a lot. I mean, that's just a lot. Two first-round picks is a lot. You know, it's probably Ricky for Drew Holiday and two future pieces. So is that future piece of Dante? Is that future? I'd love the idea. If I could have Dante, Drew Holiday, and Donovan Mitchell as my backcourt, that sounds really exciting to me. So I'm pretty reluctant to do that. What is interesting, if you throw Favors and Mirotić in the deal, it actually works. And I don't know why they would necessarily do that. Favors is nice because you can pick up that contract if you want it. I don't know. Hollinger says that would help three wins to us take five off them. I'm not, unless Drew Holiday just announces to them, get me out of here, I'm pissed, I'm going to be a pain. I can't see why they would do that. Drew Holiday next to Donovan Mitchell is exciting. A good defense, like that's a, you know, Rubio's done a nice job next to Donovan Mitchell, too. Let's not forget that. Like, we're just having this. I'm not suggesting. I got asked about it. How crucial were the turnovers by Rubio in the third quarter when they were down 10? I would guess not very. In this sense. So we were down 10 in the third quarter, making a run back, and Ricky made two really not great turnovers. One particularly that kind of stemmed the tide of the game, and just, you know, swung it back the other way. If we go find that, let me see if I can find when that is. The Jazz cut it to 78-67 with 9 minutes left in the third. Then all right, so it's 80-70. Rubio, by the way, we're going to talk about Rubio making the three to make it a 10-point game. At that point, the win probability of the Portland Trailblazers was at 86%. Myers Leonard dunks it to make it a 12-point game. It goes to 88. Lillard makes a layup to make it 14. It goes to 92, and Rubio gets taken out of the game. Okay? So, was it a bad turnover? Yes. Was it an ill-timed turnover? Yes. Was it get him taken out of the game? Yes. Was it something we should be belaboring afterwards the game, like in the sense of it cost us the game? No. Our win probability was at 14% when he hit the three, which he probably deserves credit for. And by the time we were down 14, our win probability was at 8%. We didn't have a very good chance in either circumstance. The Jazz need another player who's capable of taking the load off Donovan Mitchell. I think we all agree. Eric, I think we agree. Like, for all of Ricky's strengths, when he does that, that's something that he and Joe are being pushed out of their comfort zone to relieve Donovan Mitchell. Right. So, yes, another decently sized usage player would be nice for the Jazz. Long show today. We play worse with Rubio. Is that true? Says Josh. Do you know that to be true? Let's see. Like, I don't know if that's true. Let's look it up. Ricky Rubio. Defensively, offensively, we are the exact same if Rubio's on the floor or off the floor. We shoot better when Ricky's on the floor, and we turn it over the same. We don't offensive rebound as much, and our free throw rate is down. Our defense is about the same, slightly a little less good with Ricky Rubio on the floor. We allow a higher shooting percentage, but we force many more turnovers with Rubio on the floor. Honestly, we don't have anything there. The guys that swing our meter are Joe Ingles and Rudy Gobert. If you want to go on floor, off floor, Joe Ingles, Rudy Gobert, Jay Crowder, and the one guy who we're less good on the floor with is Derek Favors. And that's hard to believe because if you watch the games, it sure feels like Favors is having a massive impact, but our offense is 8 points less good per 100 possessions when Derek's on the floor. So that's not really true. Hello from Punta Cana. Hello from Germany. Dame is so good. That is true. Hello from Poland. Game was broadcast over AFN. I think that's Air Forces Network over here. So, Danny, thank you for your service to America. I love Rubio so much, but let's be honest, we need Conley to compete for a home playoff seed. Yeah, I guess, I mean, I think universally across the NBA, it's generally accepted that Mike Conley is a borderline all-star, and that is not a something that Ricky Rubio has been talked about, so that would seem to be across the NBA would be an upgrade. I think if you look at Memphis's numbers with Mike Conley versus without Mike Conley, he would probably be pretty positive. I don't know that for a fact. They don't have much of a backup, though. They don't have as good a second team. Someone like Joe Ingles or Donovan Mitchell who's playing instead of Rubio. That's a little bit of where some of that on-off stuff is a little misleading. Looking it up right now. Cleaning the Glass added this feature. The offense for the Grizzlies is 6 points better per 100 possessions when Conley's on the floor, and the defense is 8 points better. Wow, that's big. They really don't have any depth. Quinn does a really good job of scheming around the Jazz overall lack of athleticism, but against teams with wall-to-wall athletes like Oklahoma City, Portland, Milwaukee, Indiana, we really struggle. Other than Golden State, Oklahoma City is the worst first-round matchup for us because of that. Okay, but we beat them last year, so that would, seems to be we got over that. We are a skill-based team more than an athleticism-based team. I think that's probably true. If AD is moved, do you think the Jazz will go after Holiday? I think we've talked about that a lot. We're probably hitting that point where a lot of the questions have been answered. We've only been doing this for 45 minutes. Rubio and Ingles would be bench players on elite teams. Not Joe. Talked to Terry Stotts the other night, and he was just raving about the player that Joe Ingles is. I think Joe Ingles is the absolute good player on a good team. You mentioned a rim roller is important as a three-point shot. Does it change perspective on potential of a Favors trade? I mean, Derek has huge value to us as a backup center. And is really, really important in those lineups when he's the backup center. That's his value. And he's great at it. So that's legitimate high-level value right there. Will the Jazz make a move before the trade deadline? If so, what moves do you see best for the Jazz? If not, then why? I think what's interesting on that question is what's best for the Jazz to make them better for this season only, or is there something in the salary composition of what I talked about earlier that getting someone with a 2-year deal is probably better for them than getting someone with a 4-year deal, and can they do something of that nature that actually lines them up better going forward and may or may not make them better this year. I think that's an interesting angle on things. All right, awesome show. Thank you very much. We'll talk about more of it tomorrow as we get ready for the Atlanta Hawks, and I'll dig through the questions I didn't get to as well. Thank you very much for the show. It is Locked On Jazz. Go listen to Locked On NBA with Kevin Pelton. It's fabulous. You can tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On NBA.